If you've ever found yourself spiraling down a late night rabbit hole of what am I meant to do and why haven't I found it yet? And let's be honest, who hasn't? Then you're in the right place. I'm Teresa White, career clarity expert and 5-time certified career coach, and I'm here to help you navigate the question of how to find a career that truly lights you up. On Career Clarity Unlocked, we're all about those light bulb moments. I'm talking to people who are still trying to figure out what they're meant to do, coaching them life to reach that magical, yes, this is it moment. And we'll also hear from those who've already found their dream careers and figure out exactly how they did it. Whether you're looking for inspiration or actionable advice on finding a career you love, I've got you covered. Time to unlock some career clarity. Let's dive in. Welcome back to Career Clarity Unlocked. Today, we are tackling a topic that I think hits home for many of us: overcoming fears and breaking free from all those limiting beliefs that keep us stuck in our careers. We'll be diving into why rooting in your desires is the key to getting unstuck, how those tough seasons might just be the glow-up moment you need, and the secret to managing for optionality while still offsetting risk. So this episode is going to be packed with inspiration and actionable tips. So please stick around. You don't want to miss this. And I'm so excited because today I have Metke Rosen joining me. She's a career coach for mid-career tech leaders. She helps growth-minded millennials get unstuck and have the career glow up that they deserve. She loves working with high performers at the senior manager to VP level in non-technical roles and helping them build their legacy, create impact, and get paid their worth. Let's get started. Welcome, Metke.
Hello, hello. I'm so excited to be having this chat with you, Teresa.
Oh, I'm so excited for you to be here today. And I can't wait to dive into all of the amazing topics you want to touch on today. But let's start with your career journey. You have such an interesting background, from teaching in rural China, working at Udemy during the rapid growth, managing partnerships at Coursera. What's been your career story in a nutshell?
Yeah, well, and we'll try to keep it to a nutshell. But yeah, I started my career in the classroom. I was a teacher at a nonprofit working in rural China, rural Southwest China, where I taught elementary school. And that experience, as you can imagine, I already had a strong desire to create impact in people's lives. And that experience really helped me understand the importance of scaling impact. I followed that that curiosity to get my master's in international education policy at Harvard, where I was like, okay, I've got this. I'm going to go work in policy. I'm going to change the world through education policy. Done. And then I realized that I am far too impatient for policy work. I like moving fast. I like whipping through failures and successes as quickly as possible. And so I moved to tech, right? Which is a logical leap. I worked in startups and tech, all the way from seed stage startups to Series B to big corporations, hundreds of year old corporations, across a variety of roles: marketing, BD, partnerships, and sales. And you know, was really driven by this desire to create value, to create impact. And ultimately, I decided that I really wanted to create impact on my own terms and grow on my own terms. And so that's what led me to career coaching.
That is amazing. It's so fascinating to hear all the different steps along your journey that led you to where you are today. Throughout that whole time in your career, you already touched on saying like, oh, I'm too impatient for policy. And I 100% relate. I could not do something where it's like, it takes years and years and years to make impact. But that's exactly the right thing for some people. Totally. But I'm really curious, along that journey, was it always that you felt really aligned in the roles that you were in? Or were there also sometimes where you're like, this is not it, I want to do something else?
I think at every role I've had, I was aligned for like maybe a week. And then I quickly outgrew it. And I think that's the case for a lot of high performers and a lot of folks who really have that growth mindset, right? You get a role and you're like, got this. Like, this is so exciting. I'm the perfect person for this. And then you quickly outgrow it. And, you know, oftentimes that's a signal, right? When you feel like you've outgrown your role. What I've learned the hard way is usually that means that you're missing a blind spot. right, around your growth, that there's an opportunity for growth that you just need to get some mentorship to unlock. But oftentimes, you know, it means that you're ready for bigger, better things, different things, new challenges. And so, you know, I think throughout my entire career, I really grappled with having that balance of staying committed to the work and staying long enough to create value and sort of keeping the curiosity, the growth mindset alive and not settling, right? I think that balance is often really challenging.
That is, I think, as you said, for high achievers, a common theme that we get into it all. We are so excited. For me, it is, I figure it all out because talk about an archetype, I'm a scientist, and I'm so driven by figuring things out and making things process better and improve it. And then it's on running smooth, and I'm like, so what am I going to do next?
What do I do now?
What now? Don't let me maintain this. I need to move on to the next challenge. And I think it's something that a lot of high achievers go through of that cycle. So what, how did you, or are you still in the cycle, or how did you break out of this of always getting unfulfilled in a role after a short amount of time?
I mean, to be honest, it's why I became an entrepreneur, right? A piece of the story that I left out at the beginning was that during grad school, I toyed with the idea of becoming a founder. And I realized that, like, I had never worked in a great company before. So how the hell was I supposed to be a founder? Which is, you know, most founders just sort of go for that, right? And for better or for worse. And so, you know, when I had worked in a number of companies and had my own successes and helped companies have their success as well, I realized that, you know, entrepreneurship was a path for me, at least, to always be scared, to always be learning and growing. But I found that this also coincides with being a millennial. And for a lot of us millennials, when we, you know, enter our 30s, we have to redefine ambition. Right. And so a lot of the times what I find working with clients, and I'm sure you have the same experiences, a lot of the desire to grow comes from this belief that we should be doing more. And I think for a lot of us, the pandemic really broke that habit and made us reflect on, like, well, what are we doing here? Right. What's the point? What's the point of life? And so, you know, one of the things that I hear a lot is, like, we're really, like, set up for success to redefine our ambition at this point. Millennials, like, what do we care about? How can we make bank and create impact and fulfill our communities and our relationships and have a legacy in that capacity as well, while also maintaining that growth mindset and that desire for learning and being challenged?
I absolutely agree. And I see that too. And I think it's also giving ourselves permission to change. Like, when I look back at my early 20s, success was completely differently defined for me. I wanted to work. I didn't care about working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. That I wanted a career success, and that was so important to me. And then in my 30s, I had my kids, and I'm like, okay, I still want to make good money, but I also need work-life balance. And I see that with a lot of clients, especially when they're late 30s, 40s, is when it becomes like, okay, I'm doing well in my career, but it doesn't feel fulfilling or meaningful or impactful. There is something missing. And I think then it's another shift of, like, okay, how can I find this missing piece? Because I've made money, if that went well, and I checked some of the other boxes, but there are still some boxes that I want to check, or that came up later in my life and that became more important than they were 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a key point around letting goals change with you.
Yes.
Right? And, like, letting them evolve and having space to come back to them and look at them again. And one of the things that I've been really excited to chat with you about is this concept of really starting from a place of understanding your desires when it comes to getting career clarity. And, like, you know, we go through our careers, we're all brought up differently, right? But, like, especially for high performers, I mean, you know, either we're middle children for a variety of reasons, we're high performers. And I find that high performers just have always expected to be high performers of themselves, you know, by themselves or of others. And we rarely, like, take a step back to think about, like, well, okay, I want to be successful, but like, what does that mean? Right? Like successful in what capacity? What do I actually care about? What do I really want? Right?
Yeah. It's so, that is so important. And also then differentiating off, what does success look like for my parents, for the community I live in, for the society I live in? And is that aligned with what success looks like for me, or is it not? And there's no right or wrong. Maybe success does look like making a lot of money for you. Perfect. Fine. But it's not for everyone. Everyone has a different definition of what their what they want their life to look like and what the type of impact they want to make. How do you guide your clients to help them figure this piece out?
It's always the place that we start. And I think oftentimes it really comes with like some apprehension, some resistance, some fear. Like, well, let's just get to the coaching. Like, we don't need to think about, you know, desires. Like, who has time for that? First is always like setting the expectation that like this is worthwhile, right? This is really like it is worth. If you don't think about your desires now, you will end up being 75 and not have any clue why and how you ended up where you are. So that's the first thing. And then the second piece is really, to be honest, it gets a little morbid. We think about what you want to do before you die. Mm-hmm. That's a really key piece of it, is like thinking about what is the legacy that you want to leave behind, and like expanding the definition of legacy beyond the sort of norm of like, you know, your kids and like the financial legacy. But like, you know, every time that I dig into the desire piece with clients, there's always this theme around relationships being the key thing that stands out for them when they think about their career, right? Like the defining impact is not, oh, I launched this product, or like, oh, I, you know, it's not even like, oh, I helped this company grow from like, you know, one person to 1,000 headcount, right? That's never it. It's really, oh, I like had these amazing relationships, and oh, I like mentored and managed an amazing team, or like I was there for people, or I made enough money that like my kids could go to whatever college they want, right? And so I take a very fast-forwarded view of like, what does life look like when you're 70? Like, what do you want it to look like? And then we come back to like, okay, well, what do we do now? But really starting with that long-term view that can be a little like nuanced, right? A little bit more, but a little bit like exciting, a little bit curious, and really start from that complex place of, what do you want to do before you die?
Mm-hmm. That's a powerful one of thinking about ourselves, even if you just go to retirement of, mm-hmm, when I look back on my career, what, and on my life, what are the thoughts I want to have? When I'm retired, do I want to think back and be like, I spent the last 50 years waking up dreading every day, and I knew I would have been able to do more, but I never found it. And I never put myself first, or I never made that effort to really find what I meant to do. Or do you want to be retired and look back and say like, man, I'm really proud of the last however many years. And I love, of course, we don't love every second at work, no matter what job you do. But for the majority of time, I was really happy. I felt I made an impact. I made a positive contribution. I was successful. I was fulfilled. So it's so powerful when we think into the future and then reflect, like, what do we want to think back on?
Right. Totally. Yeah. And, you know, and then it becomes very clear about what steps are and what terms of what you prioritize. And to just sort of put this in context, right? Sometimes it's like, okay, well, you know, I don't want to work until I'm 65. I want to be able to be in the community. And so, okay, got it. So then I want to retire by the time I'm 60. Well, what do I want to do to be able to retire? Well, I need like 3 startup windfalls. I need 3 big IPOs. Cool. Well, then you need a career of needing to build your portfolio of startup equity. Boom, we got it. So we're going to, you know, do a Series A and then a Series C and then a, you know, a bang and a boom, and like play around so that you have the financial pieces that you need to make that happen. And then you have the team pieces and the management pieces that you need to feel fulfilled so that you can retire when you're, you know, whatever age. So that's sort of like how it comes through in terms of the career plan.
That's incredibly impactful to really think about this long-term vision and how, and then work your way back. And I also feel that that part really plays into the fear. Because a lot of times, right, we have a fear remark. Our brain, we're humans, our brain sends signals that a change is scary. Like the moment we want to make a big change, small change, big change, actually, our brain will send a signal like, danger, danger,
run away,
yes, run away. But then, so once we become aware of it, it's like, okay, I want to make a change, but this change is really scary. If I reflect back to retirement later towards the end of my life, there's also going to be a fear of like, will I have regret looking back? And then which fear is bigger? Is the fear of looking back at my life with regret bigger, or is the fear of making a change now bigger? And it helps us make a more conscious decision about which steps we want to take. Again, that doesn't necessarily say one is right or wrong, but it gives you a more of a full picture of, instead of just be like, okay, change, let me run the other way. Or, okay, what are my alternatives here? And what, how will this play out in the long run?
Right. Totally. It's all about trade-offs.
Yes.
Right? And that's how I think about any situation where you're managing risk, which is all the time, right? Our brains are always trying to manage risk. That's how we stay alive. And I think thinking about the big picture and then zooming into like, okay, well, if I do this and I thinking of like product manager, right? If I choose the IC, like the individual contributor product manager path for the next couple of years, then that kind of shuts me off to being a manager, right? So how can I open that door back up so that I leave optionality open for me to come back into the management role? Or like, you know, maybe I want to be, I see this with a lot of my clients, maybe I want to become a founder at some point and found a tech company or be a consultant or start my own business, whatever. What skills do I need to pick up along the way over the next 2, 5, 7 years? Who do I need to learn from? What kind of cash cushion do I need to build? And then it's very clear the trade-offs that you need to make that happen, right? And how do you open doors for yourself in the future? How do you give to your future self that optionality?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I like that you talk about the concept of optionality. Can you, for our listeners who haven't thought about this term in the past, can you explain what it means and how the idea of managing optionality plays into career planning?
Yeah. Managing for optionality and managing for upside are like finance terms that I've co-opted. I'll actually start with the origin of how I started using these terms, which is in personal context. So my husband and I, we're co-CEOs of the household. We manage one headcount, which is my 9-month-old. I think the way that we think about it is we make life choices that are not going to shut any doors. Right, we're only going to make life choices that open up doors. So for example, I moved from San Francisco to Chicago. We decided we were moving before the pandemic. And the pandemic happened. We stayed steady with that plan. But we moved to Chicago because, you know, it's cheaper, lower taxes, and closer to an airport. So we had a sense that, okay, well, you know, we really want to do more international travel. There's always a layover in SF. So we moved to Chicago. Easy, direct flights. Do we take a direct flight to Paris every day? Absolutely not, obviously. But we have that optionality, right? My husband and I are both entrepreneurs. Why did we do that? Because we're creating the optionality for the sort of life that we want to build, flexibility from a cash perspective. And, you know, we think about our own trade-offs of like, do we go back into the job market and do a couple of more rounds at a startup? Maybe at some point, right? But we would only do that if we were clear on the upside that it would bring, the upside being another IPO or two, or a new set of skills or a new perspective or a new story, right? That we would tell at our retirement party, right? To go back to the part of our conversation. So that's sort of like how I live it in my personal life. And then from a professional perspective, you know, the way that we think about it is the way that we think about it in our careers, it can really come down to like, how do we make choices that don't limit us, Mm-hmm. Right. So I'll go back to the IC versus manager path, right? Yeah. This is another thing that comes up when you're thinking about how do I want to redefine my ambition? A lot of folks are like, oh, I'm a manager now and I'm not so sure that I like being in meetings all the time. Like, this is actually kind of a drag. So let's say you're a manager. You manage a couple of people. You're trying to decide, do I become an IC or do I go back to being an IC and like life's more chill and there's more balance? Or do I keep going with the manager path? Well, you know, you kind of want to always leave the path open to be a manager. Let's say you go back and you become an IC and you hate it, or you feel like you get stuck from a cash, like from a call perspective. You always want to leave that door open to go back to being a manager. You don't want to just get stuck, right? So in that case, like, okay, well, how can you be an IC? What kind of context do you need to be in so that you can still grow? Maybe it's leading, still even thinking about this product piece, because it's a lot of my clients right now are product managers. So like, let's say you're like basically building a new business or a new business channel or a new product or whatever, and it's sort of self-contained. You're not managing people, but you're still growing and you're learning new skills. That can leave the door open for you to come back into the management track where you're doing that same thing, but just managing people who do it more directly.
No, I like the idea of keeping the doors open and being doing that in a conscious way.
Exactly.
And it's not bad, right? If management doesn't resonate with you, going back to an IC, you can still create opportunities to lead and manage. Exactly. It's not that an IC never has any, they might not have direct reports, but you can still, like if you lead a product launch, you're leading and you're managing a lot of people and a lot of workflows, right. But not just doing it, but being aware like, okay, I'm still practicing my management skills. I'm still practicing leadership skills. Right. And then when it comes to your next career step, being able to talk about it of what you've done, even though you didn't have direct reports, you've done that work.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it's to really simplify it, it's the difference between running from a sticky problem and running towards a great problem, right? Right. Running towards something that's challenging and exciting or different. It's like running from, oh God, this sucks. Like, let me just move on and just
take the best thing. Exactly. Yeah, I really like that idea of running towards an exciting problem, because there's a lot of exciting problems to solve in this world.
Absolutely. Lots of problems that are ripe to be solved.
Yes. Oh my God, yes, we don't even gotta go into the world's problems. And as we talk about really leaning into doing work that you love, one assessment that I personally love using with my clients is the Sparkotype assessment. And as you know, I have all my guests on the podcast take the Sparkotype assessment to chat about that as well. For those who haven't heard about the Sparkotype assessment, you can take it for free on sparkotype.com. And it was created by Jonathan Fields, and he describes our Sparkotype as the unique imprint for work that makes us come alive. And I find this assessment incredibly impactful and really leaning into what we want to do more of in our life. And I'm so curious, McKay, your primary Sparkotype showed up as the advisor. Advisors are all about guiding to grow, and it's the work of coaching, mentoring, advising fills you up like nothing else. That is satisfaction. Yeah, I was like, no way. So did that resonate with you?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it sort of takes me back to how I became a coach in the first place, which was I would always take info interviews, like when people would reach out, be like, oh, like I want a job at Coursera. Can you help me think through it? I'd be like, yeah, girl, I got you. Most people hate info interviews, but they just like gave me so much energy. And I'm like, well, this is curious.
Wow. And do you feel like throughout your entire career, you were able to tap into this ability to coach, mentor, advise? Or were there roles where you felt like something was missing and it might have been parts of that?
That's an interesting way to think about it. Yeah, I mean, I think in the roles where I felt the most fulfilled, it was partnership roles. And partnerships is a version of sales. It can look like a lot of different things. And for me, it was really about building long-term multi-year initiatives with universities. I'm thinking about my university partnerships role at Coursera. And in that capacity, it was always so fun helping my counterpart on the other side, my point of contact at the university level, like think about and advise, like advising them on how to build their online learning strategy, right? Like where does online learning plug in to the company or the org-wide vision or the university-wide vision? And so, you know, when I was in partnerships, like I always loved that sort of consultative version of sales, right? Where you're supporting the client to make great use of the product that you're, overseeing.
That's super interesting. And it's beautiful to see how that impulse of wanting to consult, coach, advise can show up in so many different ways of in a partnership role. I see work with a lot of clients who, when they're advisors, they really tend to gravitate towards those roles of where can I build relationships? Where can I be in a role where I advise? Is that in working with customers, with clients, building partnerships? Or in your case, it brought you all the way to coaching and mentoring where you get to do this all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the best part of my day.
Love it. And your shadow sparkotype showed up as the essentialist. The shadow sparkotype is often the work you do in order to be able to do the work of your primary at a higher level. So the essentialist impulse is all about creating order, distillation, simplification, and clarity. You think in systems and processes. When you see chaos, mess, complexity, or a lack of organization, it triggers an innate urge to create order and simplicity. I share the sparkotype with you, and I'm curious if this resonates for you too.
100%. I love building a process. Like, it's like my dream, like Friday afternoon, you know, I'm just chilling, having a cup of tea, maybe having a beer. And I'm just like, oh, let me build a process. Let me build like a tracker for this.
I'm right there with you. And I'm like, business-wise, yes, I need to have a structured process for everything. It needs to be clear. Like, there can't be any mess, complexity. Like, it needs to be simplified, ordered, all of that. But when every time I read back to this, when you see chaos or mess, it triggers an innate urge to create order and simplicity. I have that urge every time I walk into our kids' room. And now I can tell myself, okay, it's the essentialist impulse that kicks in. And it's an innate impulse. I'm like, I need to organize this.
Oh my gosh. I'll tell a funny story about this. After I quit my job at McGraw Hill, I had this moment, between corporate and coaching, at this moment where I quit my job and I was like, well, who am I? Who am I without a job? Who am I if I'm not crushing it in corporate? And so I had a couple of weeks where I was like, I think I'm just like, what if I just am a stay-at-home wife? Like, okay, what does that look like? And so what I did was I made the most elaborate menu system for my family. And at the time, it was literally just my husband. And so I had this menu, right? Every day, I was like, honey, you can have, for breakfast, we have yogurt, we have oatmeal, we have eggs. And for lunch and for snack, we have these things. And he was like, please get a job. This is not, you're fired from this like beta test of being a housewife. Like, this is just not going to work. Too much structure.
That would have been the perfectly structured household, though. I mean, seriously, I would love if my husband would walk up to me and be like, here's your breakfast menu. What would you like?
That's what the problem was, honestly.
No, I think your husband, he should have just be like, this is your new role. Allow your parents hummus for a snack today.
That's right. So yes, I love creating order, and it is much better focused, much better channeled into my entrepreneurial pursuits.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and there are so much, right? Being entrepreneurial,
always having
order. And the idea with the shadow sparkotype is that it allows us to do the work of our primary even better. And for me, that is so true because my shadow is creating order, the essentialist. And I love to create orders and systems. But I love doing it the most when it helps me solve a problem, which is my primary, is figuring things out and problem solving. So just creating order, it's fine. It's okay. But if I get to create order and a system and a process in order to solve a problem,
And I wonder if that's the same for you, if then you create order and simplification in a process, and that allows you to do the work of coaching, mentoring, advising at a higher level. I wonder if that is that fulfilling moment for you as well.
No, totally, totally. I mean, I love helping my team perform at a higher level, right? So I've got a couple of folks on my Coach Memory K team, and really building the right processes so that the three of us can work together and work effortlessly together and seamlessly together so that we can serve our amazing clients, right? And, you know, things are just running on the back end and on the front end. It looks like, you know, a beautiful white glove service, right? And I've always found that, like, systems and processes, you know, as I've been building my system or my business, systems and processes are helpful. And it is always, always so important to me that we're not just running on autopilot, right? Yes. Systems are there so that we can do more, so that we can create more, so that we can test things and experiment. Like for instance, recently, we just beta tested curating job postings for our clients. And we were like, okay, let's just test this out and see if we can curate amazing job descriptions for clients. And we have a system and it works. And now it's part of the package, so to speak. And so, yes, definitely a big fan of this framing of like building systems and processes to serve the higher purpose.
Oh, I'm so with you. It resonates so much with me. And even though my primary spark archetype is very different than yours, like on the sales archetypes, but it's still like that creating order. And for me, it's then figuring out the problem, solving the problem of what are they meant to do and how do we get them that job? So it's still that same mindset of like, how can we have a structure and a process in place? And as you said, it's always a structure and process that involves. I'm like, I always have processes. I'm kind of known for reinventing the wheel every single time because the moment I have more information, I need to update the whole process of like, okay, we learn something new here. Or like, as we see, 2024 has been a tough year in the job market. So some of these things in the process aren't as effective as they used to be. So let's change it up and let's create a new order, a new system, a new process. Wanted to serve our clients best.
Exactly. And it's funny because I really feel free to psychoanalyze this. I really push myself personally to like, I don't push myself. It happens such that personally, there are certain pockets of disorder. Like my Google Drive on my personal Google Drive, total nightmare, total dumpster fire. And I'm just like, you know, I need a little bit of spice. There needs to be something that I can fix when I have a couple of days when I am sick and I just need to be doing something, right? I have some systems squirreled away for future McKay to fix and to create order.
Oh my God, I love this. And I mean, this is only fellow essentialist will understand that we'll keep a pile of mess somewhere so that if we need a moment of excitement, we have something to clean up.
Absolutely.
Another topic I really wanted to touch on with you before we come to an end on our conversation is, and also the title of this episode is about tough seasons. And as we already started in the beginning, right, I think everyone's career has ups and downs. And you speak about turning tough seasons into career glow-ups. Have you experienced that for yourself? And what does this mean for you or for your clients?
Yeah. So I've always found that job seeking worked best for me. Like my job searches were most impactful when I was committed to it being a fantastic experience. Like I just refuse to accept that a job search has to suck, that it has to be stressful, that it has to burn you out, that it has to be, you know, just sort of like take everything that you have.
Yeah,
like it can be an opportunity for personal growth. That can be a glow up, right? A career glow up. And that's sort of how I lived it in corporate is like always having agency and always choosing growth and recognizing that it's going to be hard because otherwise it wouldn't be fun. And then of course as well, most people wouldn't do it. And in terms of I also channel a lot of my own personal experiences with this, right? And whenever I'm going through a tough season personally, I sit with it. I recognize that it's kind of shitty, right? Whatever it is that's going on. And it's always helpful to acknowledge and trust that you're going to get through it, that you're going to be on the other, that at some point in the future, you're going to be on the other side of it, that it is impermanent. And then once you get on the other side, thinking back to those moments, right? When you're in a less than toughest season, just a normal tough season, reflecting back on how you've crushed it in the past, how you persevered, how you pushed through, and committing to showing up how you want to show up in that tough season, right? I was actually just having a conversation with a client yesterday who's going through a bit of a tough season personally, professionally. And my question for her was, yeah, this is like maybe the toughest couple of years of your life, personally, professionally, for a variety of reasons. How do you want to show up? What is that version? It's not going to be the same version of how you show up that it was like when things were easy. It's going to be different. It's going to feel different. But being clear about how you want to commit to yourself, and then, you know, having the external commitments, the external accountability to be that person and just do it, right? So I sort of hold the duality of assuming that it can be easy, right? When you think about like the job search piece in particular, like there are definitely ways to make it easy. I've got clients like, you know, it's ran offers over here, and there's a certain ease and a certain sense of real confidence that my clients have when they're going through the job search, and it's by design. And also there are tough moments, right? And working through them with trust for yourself and with grace. And
And I agree with that. It's okay to acknowledge that it's a tough moment. We don't always have to pretend everything's rainbow and butterflies and sunshine. We can say like, this is a really tough season. I'm in a job that really drains me. I'm having some personal stuff going on that makes it really hard. I feel overwhelmed with everything. And it's okay to feel that way. And then having both parts, right? But giving yourself grace and allow yourself to feel like this is really tough. But then thinking about, okay, I can change some things right now, but how do I want to show up for them? And what do I want to do? And I agree of, do I want my job search to suck? Do I just want to be sending out hundreds of applications and get rejected? Or do I want to be slightly uncomfortable, but in a good way, and try different things that actually make it rain offers? I see this with my clients too. So it is, how do I want to approach and how do I want to show up?
Totally. Well, I mean, I think it's all on it. It really comes down to like a theme that I am just reflecting back of this call is like, this conversation is agency. Yes. Right? Intention and agency.
Yes.
And volition, and really being in the driver's seat of your career.
I love that. Yeah. I always say that, get in the driver's seat of your career. Because yes, as long as you let stuff happen to you, it's not going to turn out the way you really want it to turn out. But the moment you get clear about the vision, what do you want your career and your life to look like? Then you can become in charge of the actions you take to make this a reality.
Totally. 100%. Yes.
And what advice would you give someone who is right now stuck in a tough season and feeling they're not making any progress in their career? What would be the first piece of advice you would share with them?
I think it's really to get clear on those desires. And I find that in order to do that, obviously one way is to work with a coach. Got two great coaches right here. But the other way is to take a step back, right? Give yourself some breathing room, either take a vacation or pause job seeking for a week or so, like sort of turn off as many inputs as you can to just sort of give yourself some grace. And then really starting to reflect on what you want. Start doing the work around, where do you want to be in the next 20 years? And then zooming back into, you know, what do you want to do now? And then with that clarity, things will be a lot easier.
I love that piece of advice of giving yourself space. And it is so hard, I think, especially high achievers.
Yeah.
You want to go. Right. And it's not natural for us to step away and give ourselves space, but it can be so incredibly powerful. And it doesn't need to be months of space, but a weekend of no other, of as little input as possible can be really powerful.
Totally. I practice phone-free Saturdays, which is like shocking to most people, but like, no phone. And I hide it away. Sometimes I have my husband hide it for me. I'm feeling really like really itchy for it. But just that's just one example of like how you can create micro moments of space for yourself to really just, you know, get a breather and come back and be grounded with yourself.
I think you just inspired me for a phone free day a week. That is really amazing. I'm going to give this a try.
I got you. I'll hold you accountable to that.
Yes, please check in with me next week if I manage to get one day without my phone. It's just the work stuff that I look on my phone. Personal stuff, I could do a week without my phone. Uh-huh. But for work, it's like, but you're right. Give yourself space. Create those micro moments. I love that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
This has been an amazing conversation, McKay. Where can listeners connect with you and learn more about you and your work?
Yeah. So I love connecting with new folks. You can find me on LinkedIn, McKay Rusin, or you can find me on Instagram, also McKay Rusin. Lucky to have a unique enough name that I can claim that handle. Send me a DM. We can have a chat about what's going on for you. If you're feeling stuck right now, just send me the word breakthrough and I'll take the conversation from there.
That is amazing. And I can highly recommend reaching out to McKay if you are feeling stuck. And she shares amazing content. So she's definitely someone you want to follow. And if her approach resonates with you, reach out to her with the work breakthrough. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Career Clarity Unlocked. I hope that you're walking away with some fresh insights and ideas on how to tackle your fears, embrace those tough seasons, and manage for optionality in your career. Love this term. And if you're ready for your own career glow up and want to dive deeper, you can also book a free consultation call with me, and we'll get you unstuck and clear on your next career steps in record time. Together, we'll unlock your potential and get you on a path to career clarity. And all you need to do is DM me the word clarity and I will send you more information and we'll take it from there as well. And you can find me on LinkedIn at Teresa A. White. And if you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to Career Clarity Unlocked podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts so you don't miss an episode. It would mean the world if you could leave a quick review and share this episode with someone who could use a career glow up. Your feedback truly helps us grow and reach more amazing listeners like you. Thank you for tuning in, everyone, and we will see you next week.